This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a Deacon and Trustee Seminar held on June 25, 2026 in Guthrie, Kentucky.
Well, good morning. I greet each one of you in Jesus' name. The topic that I was assigned is setting your house in order. In the Old Testament, a prophet came to a king one day, told him that he was going to die. Set your house in order, for ye shall die and not live. And if the Lord tarries, I think that's advice that would carry through for each one of us today. We should set our house in order, which literally means to give charges to be obeyed, to tell this person to do that and tell this person to do this, to line out instructions, because you shall die and not live. It may be today, it may be 30 years from now, but you shall die and not live. If you've got children around of your own or grandchildren, that phrase, pick up after yourself, is something that's probably been spoken in your house. We want to teach children to pick up after themselves. If they come in and they dump the basket of the farm animals out and build a big sprawling farm complex all across the living room floor, I appreciate that when, I'm glad that they do it. Like I love to watch the boys spread the toys out, and they've got a farm that goes on and on and on. But when it's time for them to go home, I also like it that my son says, now it's time to pick up after yourself. And they get down there on the floor on their hands and knees, and the cows go back where the cows go, and the horses go where the horses go, and the fences get folded up. And then when I got to go to the bathroom at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm not breaking my leg. Okay? Because children are being taught to pick up after themselves. Do you know, I suspect in your churches there's quite a few adults who never learned to do it. They've never yet learned to pick up after themselves. And when they're gone, there's going to be a little bit of mess for somebody to clean out. Who's this topic for? Setting your house in order. Well, I think it's for most of us sitting here. We've got our own houses. And certainly if you are serving in some position of leadership in the community, you're a deacon or a minister or a bishop or the type of person that is respected in the community to where you're put on committees and asked to be a trustee here and there, it'd be pretty embarrassing if your own house wasn't in order. And you can lead by example by setting your house in order. So we need to do it. But then we also deal with those who don't. You have to clean up after people who didn't have their house in order. And there are some things that are a lot harder to do after the fact. I would suggest that older people need to be realistic about their stage of life. You need to soberly consider, like, where am I actually at in life? We all think of ourselves as young people. The definition of the old man keeps changing in my life. You know, old men used to be about 35 years old. And then old men were 50 years old. And then old men were 60. And now we start shaving it a little closer, and old men are 65, and then old men are 70. And pretty soon the old men, well, they're the ones who are dead. And if I'm not dead yet, I'm not really old. But no, we're all getting older. We need to be realistic about that. Our family isn't where our family was once upon a time when the boys were small. The boys are grown. It's me and mom at home. There's grandchildren. There's more resources than there were once upon a time. I need to be realistic about where I'm at in life. What is an old person? You can put your own number to that. I'm going to suggest to you the type of person who needs to get really serious about putting their house in order is anyone north of 50. So if you're north of 50 or closing in on it, or you deal with people, you have any of those in your church, then perhaps there's something in the topic that we could apply to life. How are we going to go about setting our house in order? Well, in the time that we have today, we have just a few minutes here, we're going to talk about some principles first, and then we're going to talk about application. I think that's a good way to go about it. Let's set our principles first so we know where we hang everything else that we talk about when we get down to shoe leather. I'll suggest three principles that apply to setting your house in order. Three scriptural phrases: Lord willing, think soberly, all things decently, and in order. Lord willing. It's said that man proposes, but God disposes. We are to make plans. The scripture in, I think it's the book of James, it talks about the man that he's laying out what he's going to do. We're going to go into such and such a city and buy and sell. And a caution is given. You don't even know if you're going to be alive tomorrow. If you talk about what you're going to do, you talk about in terms of Lord willing. That little expression, those two little words, they need to be woven into the fabric of how we think and then very frequently come out of our mouths. That's how people need to hear us talking. The passage in James does not come down on anyone for planning ahead, for planning to go into such and such a city and buy and sell. The passage in James comes down on the person because they did not say, Lord willing. We should be making plans. We should be feeling a sense of responsibility for whatever resources God has put into our life, be it little or a lot or somewhere in between. We're responsible for what God's given us. We are to be stewards of what God has given us. We should be making plans, but all the planning that we're going to talk about in this topic, the first principle that we firmly fix in our minds, every plan is subject to Lord willing. Like, we're going to think ahead about getting older. We're going to think responsibly about the resources we've been trusted to have. We're going to try to make some plans about what should happen, the order that it should happen, the timing that it should happen in. But it's all Lord willing. Number two, several times in the New Testament, particularly the Apostle Paul, I think it might have been one of his favorite expressions when he was speaking, because very frequently he says to think soberly. That means to think seriously. I believe God created us with a lighthearted nature, with the ability to appreciate humor. But there are times in life when it is time to sit down in your chair, on the couch, at the kitchen table, at a desk, and to think soberly. Because I am a steward. I'm not an owner of all these things that have been put into my care. I'm a steward. God's the owner. I'm working for God. I will answer to Him for how I use the resources that He has enabled me to have. What would He want me to do? I think we need to live soberly. Life in some areas of life is complex. Recently, we did a little real estate transaction with one of our neighbors, wanted to add a little piece of ground that he had yet to our property. He was willing to let it go, but he lives there and he has a life estate, and he actually didn't even own it anymore. He had already given it to one of his grandsons, and they weren't on speaking terms. Type of people who sue each other all the time. That little 3.5 acre parcel took a lot of work to get that in our name. I had to think seriously about, do we want to wade into this? And the deeper I got into it, the more seriously I had to think about it. Some of the things you have to decide as you get older in life aren't 3-minute decisions. I was just talking to someone at the break here. They were talking about a family situation they have. And I don't know that I gave them a lot of good advice, but one thing I said is, well, this is going to be a little complex. You need to get some advice, and then you probably need to think about it for about 3 months before you start doing anything, because it's complex and there's lots of different options. Lord willing, think soberly. And then that scriptural phrase that all things should be done decently and in order. So whether it's in your personal life or you're advising someone in your church community, everything that we're going to do to solve what we perceive to be our family, financial, business problem, it is going to be done decently and in order. That's one of our foundational principles. We're going to responsibly plan ahead with Lord willing firmly in our minds. We are going to think soberly. We're going to look at what needs to be looked at, evaluate the options, carefully make a decision, but we're going to do all things decently and in order. This means that we're going to do the right thing, and we're going to do the right thing the right way. We are not going to be careless. We are going to do that which is legal. Nothing will be done that is underhanded. As near as we can discern what the law is, we will follow the law. As near as we are able to get correct counsel about what the IRS requires, we will pay the utmost farthing that is required. We will not evade it if it is required. We will do what is right. From the beginning of our process of setting our house in order, all the way to the end, when they write the last check and disperse the last asset, our desire is that everything was done decently and it was done in order. What does it mean to do things in order? It means that you do first things first. There are priorities in life, and when you're thinking about your financial affairs, some things are more important than others. We will do first things first. Just maybe because it's the type of work I do, my mind often goes to giving. You know, when you're deciding what you need to do with your money, you know the first thing you decide? What ought we to give? What does God expect of us to give? The rest of the money will have to sort itself out after we've determined what we are to give. You have to get started to do things in order. You set priorities. We need, you know, we look at what we have to do, and oh my, it's a lot of work we have to do to set our house in order. But what are the most important things that need to be done? Well, these are more important than these. And then we actually have to start. There is a man, I see him one time a year. He comes to an expo that we attend and have a booth at. He comes to talk to me every year about his financial situation and what he needs to do, and he's got all this money and he doesn't know what to do with it. And I know when I see him coming, ooh, there goes 45 minutes. Okay, it is going to be 45 minutes. And he will be back next year and he will have done nothing. He'll be back with the same woes and the same, oh, what am I going to do? And I'll cover the same ground. You know, we plowed this ground quite a bit here. I actually kind of dodge him a little bit now. And I don't even feel guilty about it because I've told him it 6 times. You actually need to start. If you're going to do things decently and in order, you need to pick up the first tool off the messy tool bench and put it away. And then you go get the second one and you put it away. You have to get started. And then thirdly, well, first things first, what's a more urgent priority than what? Number two, we need to get started. Number three, once we're started, we're going to stay at it. We're going to keep, after we picked up the first tool, we are going to pick up the second tool and put it away. After we picked up the cows, we're going to pick up the horses and put them away. And then we're going to fold the fences up. Okay? We're going to start, and we're going to keep going until we are done. Setting your house in order. 3 questions for you to help you think through this. Are you intentionally and steadily working to simplify your estate? Do you understand that debt greatly increases the complexity of estate, of settling an estate? So setting my house in order, the first question I have to address, am I, at my age in life, I'm north of 50 now, I need to get serious about this, I need to be working at this, and I need to be intentionally, I'm going to do it. I'm thinking about it. I'm employing the mental capacity God gave me. I'm pulling in advice, counsel from competent people, from godly people. I'm intentionally doing it, and I'm steadily doing it. Like, we are marching along. It's going to take time, but we're going to get done. Am I steadily eliminating debt? If you have debt, it will be more complicated to settle your estate. Older people should not have debt. I understand there are circumstances in life where a person can be in an unfavorable situation, not of their choosing. But as a rule of thumb, the older people in your congregations should not have debt. They should have paid their place off. Or if they cannot pay it off, they should sell that place and move into a rented property that they can manage to pay for until the end. Sometimes people have debt in their older age because they're grabby. They're the type of person that when there's a sale in the community and a property auction, he shows up and he buys that one too. And did he really need it? No, but he's trained himself in life that you go to the community auctions, and if you can buy it, you buy it, and you tie up as much property as you can tie up. We have those people among us. Older people should not be going into debt. I will say they ought not to go into debt even for investment properties. It's time to let the younger people get the deal at the auction. You know, maybe you're an older person and you're aware that a property is coming up for sale and it needs some tender loving care and it might be a good deal. Instead of making your preparations to line up money to buy it, go tap a young person in the community on the shoulder and say, did y'all notice that property's coming up? We probably can't afford it. Well, let's look at it. Maybe you can. And I'm not going to bid against you. I'll help you go look at it, but I'm not going to bid against you. Let somebody else solve complicated issues in your life. Sometimes there are things in your affairs that are kind of sticky. Like maybe one of the children asks you about it and it's like, well, it's just kind of hard to explain how this was set up back in the day. It's complicated. Well, if it's complicated and hard to explain to somebody, how do you think they're going to solve it when you're dead? And like they weren't even there when it was set up. Okay, if you've got something that's kind of complicated, you know, it's a business relationship, ownership of some asset, please work to resolve that. And as I've started doing this topic over the last couple of years, like, okay, I have to do it myself. I'll tell a little, for instance. 16 years ago, we bought a property with my brother-in-law, divided up a farm property. I don't farm, but it's a little hobby farm we have. And we divided it up, and we got the surveyor in, and we told him to draw the line where we thought the line should be drawn. And it only went about 3 months, and it was like, that extra quarter acre really would have been a whole lot better if it had been here. Like, why in the world did we make the property line do that number right there? Shouldn't have done it. Talked to my brother-in-law, and he was like, yeah, you're right. Why did we draw the property line there? Makes a whole lot more sense for that quarter acre to be on your side of the property line. So I asked him what he wanted for it. He said, we made our deal, shook our hands. 16 years ago, he's been paying taxes on that quarter acre for 16 years because we never transferred the ground, never got it resurveyed. It's worked out very well for me. But you know what? That's a sticky thing. So we're almost done with it. It's been resurveyed. The attorney is drawing up the deed. It's actually been a lot of work. It was easier just to let it go. But how easy would it be for my children and his children to sort that out? Well, like, where was the property line supposed to be? We know that our dads made a deal back in the day and they moved the property line, but nothing was ever done. It's a whole lot easier for me to solve that problem. What is it in your life? The sticky, complicated thing that I don't even really want to talk about it because we just kind of did it back in the day and one thing led to another and it's just kind of the way it is. And well, how are the children supposed to figure that out? If you're going to be a responsible older person, you're going to get that all cleaned up so that it's in black and white, very easy to explain, and it's all taken care of by the time you're gone. Get rid of the sticky things. I would also suggest you start getting rid of some of your valuable stuff. I'll bet in a room like this, there are guys sitting here who have something that's really good. And it's been in the barn for 15 years. But it's really good. Probably somebody else was throwing it away and you scarfed it out of the scrap pile because that's too good to throw away. And your barn is full of things that haven't been pulled out in 15 years. Do you know what you ought to do? You ought to go out there and take the boys and say, is there anything here you want? Let's pull it out today. Because we're having yard sale Saturday, and if you want it, you can load it on your pickup truck and take it away today. If you haven't pulled it out in 15 years, you probably don't actually need it, do you? It's also easier to disperse stuff during your lifetime. My father passed away back in February. I'm the only boy in the family, so sorting out a bunch of his stuff is my responsibility. It has actually been fairly easy to do because he was a very detailed person in his gun safe. There was about 5 pages of instructions, do this, do this, do this, do this. It was much better than I expected. But you know what? Dealing with your dad's stuff is kind of hard. I walked in his shop and the first thing I saw, he has this sign up above his bench. It says, tool rules. Don't touch them. Don't move them. Don't borrow them. Don't even look at them. Okay? I got to get rid of all my dad's stuff. Now, he gave me a lot of stuff over the years, and I appreciate that. But you know what? It would have been a whole lot easier for me if he had given away more to the grandsons and to the other children. Maybe you should be thinking about that. You know, if you're an older person and you actually do have six sets of wrenches. Maybe you only need one set of wrenches between now and the end, and the other five set of wrenches do need to go away. You don't need six backups anymore. Sometimes older people wait to give their things away too long, and by the time they go to give them away, well, these things mean a lot to the old people, their children don't need them anymore. Their houses are full. They bought what they needed because they had to have it, and Dad wasn't letting go. I would suggest to you that you go ahead and you get rid of furniture now. Like some family piece that somebody ought to have this. Well, let them have it when they get married. And then they can actually use it rather than they're 70 years old and they inherit something from you and have to go buy a mini barn to put it in. Give it to the young people. Go through your shop. All the tools that you didn't use in the last year, haul the boys in and say, what do you want? Take it today or we're going to have yard sale Saturday. Equipment the same way. Do you actually need a rototiller anymore when you're 90 years old? If your rototiller still works and you're 90 years old, give it to one of the grandchildren so that they don't have to buy a rototiller. Simplify. Initiate transitions now. This is painting with a very broad brush, but I would say, in my observation has been that Amish people tend to do this better than Mennonites do, particularly in business. Letting go of the business, letting go of the farm, passing it on to somebody who's actually got the energy to do the work, and then being willing to step back and just be the dottie. I love the way Earl Martin says it, a friend of mine from Pennsylvania. He has a farm, they have a hog barn, they have a orchard, they have a retail store. And Earl says, I'm just a hired boy. Like, it's all been passed to the children. And he still gets to go to work when he wants to go to work. And if he doesn't, well, the hired boy took off today. That's something you can do in life when you're an older person. You can actually initiate transitions and give the responsibility and the assets to other people. Now, they should have earned their trust. They should have earned their way in life. They should have earned the opportunity to step up, but initiate the transition. That in 5 years, I don't want to have to be in this business every day. Within 5 years, I want y'all to be running the business. So how do we have to, Lord willing and planning soberly and doing things decently in order, how do we get to 5 years from now when I don't have to come in and it's going beyond what I could have done with it because I gave it to the children or to a worthy successor and they carried on with it? Do you have a buy-sell agreement in place if you have a business? Adjust living arrangements. One thing that I think I'm seeing a little more of in our communities is two old people bumbling around in a big empty house. Like, they worked all their life to get the big house, which back in the day was full of children. And now they're not quite ready to give up the big house yet. They still, when the family gets together, they want the family at their place. So they keep the big property. They can't even keep up the flower beds properly. Dad works himself to death trying to keep, you know, the field edges pushed back and not letting go. Initiate transitions sooner rather than later. Have discussions with the children about this. We've initiated this discussion at home. Who wants the home place? Because the day is coming when me and mom can't keep this up. Like, already they come and help us. So why should two older people bumble around in a big property when they've got children who have children of their own, a whole row of them, and they're crowded in a small little house or property? Something should be different. I think you should initiate transitions while you're still able to do it. There's an awkward way that it happens in life when people don't plan ahead. Like, they're going to do it. They are going to talk to the children about passing along some things. They're going to try to get their affairs in order, but not today. Like, we're going to work on that next year. But then life starts all of a sudden a little downward spiral. Mom fell and broke her hip. And she never quite bounced back from breaking her hip. And then Dad had to spend more time taking care of Mom. And then Dad got sick. And it's kind of one thing after another. And none of them are huge crises in and of themselves, but it's the stage of life where it's one thing after another. And who's got time to do all this work to put your affairs in order? And then, for some people, it ends up in the hospital and a realization the end is in sight, and it might be this far away or it might be this far away, and we quick got to get some things done. The worst situation, the worst example of that I've come across yet, I was handling some paperwork, reviewing some paperwork. A family, their father had died, and a bunch of assets changed hands, were rearranged, moved around, some charitable giving was done. I was seeing that piece of it, but I saw all the paperwork. It was about 2 weeks later I realized something. I mean, a lot of money moved around in a lot of different directions, and it all happened on the day he died. He signed all those papers the day he died. And I actually wondered, did he actually sign all those papers the day he died? Or did his children have a quick meeting and figure out, how are we going to do this? Made their compromises, drew the paperwork up, and did they sign Dad's name? Yeah, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He's gasping his dying breath and figures out where millions of dollars goes and draws up all these documents on the day he dies and got it signed and then dropped the pen and died. Yeah, maybe, and maybe not. That's an extreme example of procrastination. If you've got things that need to be taken care of, do it while you have a clear mind. Do it before events are pushing you that we have to figure it out now. Do it while you're able. I appreciate my wife's parents. They've lived a long life. They're in their early 90s. And for years, the children wanted them to get some things done. And my father-in-law, he was a bishop for many years, and he didn't just change anything real quick, and just things didn't get done. Well, it just so happened that a visiting minister was in the community, and he was staying at their home. That evening, while they were eating their popcorn before they went to bed, he asked them if they had their affairs in order. And kind of shook my father-in-law a little bit. And we learned later that him and grandma went to bed that night and they could not sleep. They started talking about the fact that their affairs were not in order. They got up and played Yahtzee for a good part of the night and talked about what they were going to do. Early the next morning, they called my nephew. He thought he was in trouble. What have we done to offend Grandpa? Because he was told you have to come to a meeting tonight. Well, they wanted them to have the place. We'll make a dotty apartment in the basement, but we want to sell everything. They sold all their properties. They had a family sale. They dispersed 60 years of married life stuff. They live in a little dotty apartment, happy as can be. Golden years. A blessing to the family. When they finally pass away, I've in my mind kind of mentally tallied it up. It'll take me and the brother-in-laws about it one afternoon to finish everything up. Everything's in cash. Liquid assets, life estate on a little dotty apartment, just the furniture that they need. They've done pretty well. They did pretty well because the prophet from a far country came and told them something that the children had been saying for probably 20 years. So maybe in somebody's life, you need to be the prophet from the far country. And you need to say, hey, friend, do you have your affairs in order? Do you have a will? Have you decided what happens to the home farm? What are y'all going to do with your business? You know, you're 50 years old. You haven't given your children the opportunity to buy into the business. Maybe you need to be that prophet from the far country. Inheritances. Have you made intentional decisions regarding inheritances? For about 30 years, I've been conducting an informal survey. When somebody I know reasonably well, their parents pass away, I'll wait an appropriate amount of time after the funeral, and just in casual conversation, I'll say, oh, settling up your folks' estate, how did it go? Now, this is not a scientific survey, but I've been asking this question for about 30 years of Amish and Mennonite people. A full two-thirds of the time, I hear the same three words. It wasn't fair. Might not be the first three words they say. But when they talk about settling their parents' estate, not less than two-thirds of the time, the words I hear eventually were, it wasn't fair. I don't think we do as well as we think we do with inheritances. How should you think about inheritances? I think that special circumstances do warrant special considerations. If you have a handicapped child in the family, that person was never able, they didn't have the same opportunity the other children had. It would be appropriate for them to have larger inheritance, maybe in a trust, under somebody else's supervision to provide for their care for the remainder of their life. Special circumstances do merit special consideration. But here is a rule of thumb. So mark this down in your mind. Favoritism in inheritances will almost inevitably sow bad seeds in a family. Favoritism in inheritances will almost inevitably sow bad seeds in a family. I don't believe fair needs to be exactly equal, but it probably needs to be pretty close to exactly equal. Are inheritances even a good thing? Are inheritances good or bad? The answer to that question is, it depends. You know, Scripture says it both ways. Scripture says that good men leave inheritances. It actually says they leave inheritances to children's children. Well, how many of you want to be a good man? Like, that would be the legacy you would want to leave behind for your children. Solomon said, good men leave inheritances to children's children. Something for the grandchildren. Scripture also says that an inheritance might be gotten hastily in the beginning, but the end of it was not good. They were maybe glad for the money, but there was something negative that came out of an inheritance. Maybe it was that there was favoritism. One got treated different than the others, and it planted a seed of jealousy. Maybe it was pride. Someone who couldn't handle money was given money, and it was to their spiritual detriment. Maybe it was someone's work ethic was destroyed because they got too large of an inheritance. Scripture is clear about the very best of inheritances. Do you know what that is? It says a godly heritage. A godly heritage is better than a home farm. A godly heritage is better than a prosperous business. A godly heritage is better than leaving cash. God's intention is that as parents, we bless, not burden, our children. Financial decisions need to be made with the children's best interest in mind. In our family situation, we do have a place we consider our home place in Virginia. We've worked at it for years. We like the place. We are starting to realize it's a bit more work than we can keep up with as we get older. And one of the things that we haven't done to the property yet, it was an old house, it's 120 years old. We totally remodeled it. We added on to it. And we thought we'd like to add a big dining room off the side yet, kind of like a sunroom. My wife has one of these big tables, and we can't even stretch it out quite as far as it actually will go. So we've talked about adding that on, but for now we've decided we're not going to do that because one of the boys is going to want to buy this place. And the one that it probably suits the best to buy it is the one that has the fewest financial resources. And everything we do to this place increases the value of the property. And if the inheritance is going to be fair across the children, all we're doing is driving up the cost of this place for the one that can least afford it. So maybe it would be better if we all pile in the smaller dining room, then put the one that can least afford it in a position where they have to buy a property they can't quite keep up with. Question 3, have you made and clearly communicated end-of-life decisions? What are those? Do you have a will? Do you need a trust? Not everyone needs a trust. A trust salesman will come to your community and try to persuade you that everybody in the community needs a trust. Be very cautious about trust salesmen. Don't trust them. Just use a good local attorney, and they can advise you whether your affairs are complicated enough that you need a trust. Do you need a will? Do you need a trust? Do you need end-of-life instructions? Like, what do you want to... What do you want at the end of your life? My father had end-of-life instructions, and I was so thankful that when he had his stroke and we knew that it was irreversible and that there was an inevitable conclusion, I was glad I could stand in front of the whole family in a hospital waiting room, and I could read off a piece of paper that Pap said he didn't want to be on a breathing machine. Okay, I didn't have to get up and say it. I could read what he said. And it made it easier for everybody to accept it, that this is the end, and that he said not to do this and not to do this, and that we're going to honor his wishes. Do you have end-of-life instructions? Have you supplied heirs with information about your financial situation? I have this just as a little simple object lesson. You ought to have a binder like this in your gun safe, our stuff. And in that, very simple information. Our wills are right here, along with the medical directives for what we do and don't want at the end of our life. Right past that are the deeds to every piece of property we own, along with some helpful information like the septic tank is located 20 yards off the southwest corner of the house. Title for every vehicle and piece of equipment that we have. Our most current financial account. Every month, I take our current bank statement and I clip it in there. I have a paper in there that shows all the money that we have. How much is in the gun safe? How much is in this checking account, that checking account? How much is in an investment account? How much is in my retirement? I update it every 2 weeks so that when I die and the boys need to go to the gun safe, the information isn't more than 2 weeks old and they know where the money is. Passwords for every account we have. I don't want them locked out. I want them to be able to close everything down. Every password is there. And my funeral plans. Why in a time of grief do I want them to have to make funeral plans when I can make my own funeral plans? There's much more that can be said. I encourage you to start the conversation. Do things decently and in order.